It's a lot of the same stuff that you saw last year.
On defense, Bobby Wagner admitting they still have some things to improve on, and this weekend will be a great challenge because they'll have to contain Lamar Jackson, who is a great improviser.
He just knows how to get out of the pocket. He knows how to make people miss. It's plays where, you think somebody got him. He stops on a dime, does a spin move, something, and it's just amazing, to watch. But, it's been a lot of spectacular runners. You just got to find a way to hit them. So that's what we're going to try to do.
And another team with a pretty impressive run game, Mark Ingram being a huge part of it. They will get a boost because Jaren Reed is back this week. Ken Norton Jr. commenting on that.
Amazing. Getting a guy like that back, knowing the impact he has on the game, the impact he has on other players, is very strong. So getting him back is really a big boost for us.
Ken Norton Jr. saying he has looked good in practice. He got a standing ovation when he came back into the room. And so they know how impactful he can be up front on the line for them. It's also the return of Earl Thomas. So many good storylines this weekend. More on all of these great games this weekend coming your way with Danny and Gallant. It's next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
710 KIRO AM Seattle. KIRO FM HD2 Tacoma. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app.
You ready to answer?
The voice of Seattle sports.
No doubt about it.
710 ESPN Seattle.
This hour is brought to you by Mazda of Everett.
This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app
and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Best football weekend of this year. I think it's got to be. Huskies getting ready to host Oregon. The Seahawks are going to be playing the Ravens, two teams with some championship pedigree, championship aspirations. And Paul, you've mentioned a word that it has four letters. It starts with an M.
Must.
Must. It's October, man.
Yeah, and it's a must-win game, Danny O'Neill.
For the Huskies, of course it is, because you can't lose to Oregon, especially when Oregon's ranked.
Oh, I'm not talking about the Huskies. I'm talking about the Seahawks of the fine city of Seattle.
The Seahawks are 5-1, though.
Yeah, they're 5-1. But, Danny, if they're going to make any damage in the playoffs, if they're going to actually have legitimate championship aspirations, they got to win this game. This is a difficult one for the Seahawks, and if you compare them to the other contenders in the NFC this weekend, they have the toughest test, I think, with this Ravens team. Lamar Jackson, a defense that maybe hasn't been playing up to the standards of old, but has Earl Thomas, a guy who definitely knows you very well. And when you compare them to some of the other teams that they're going to be vying with for a bye week in these NFC playoffs, where you've got a bunch of teams right now, a giant smorgasbord at the top, the Saints, the Packers, the 49ers, and you're all sitting at the table, and you're trying to figure out who is going to be getting that first round bye, who's going to be getting not only dinner, but a little dessert on the side. You got to win this week. You got to win because if you compare their schedule, the Seattle Seahawks, to the schedule of the Green Bay Packers and the New Orleans Saints, they've got it very easy the rest of the way. And while the San Francisco 49ers have a difficult schedule, I mean, you are basically battling with them for the NFC West. Honestly, right now, I think you're battling with the San Francisco 49ers for the 3 seed in the NFC, just comparing the Niners and the Seahawks schedule with that of the Packers and with that of the Saints.
See, I don't buy the Packers yet. I don't buy the Packers defense. And the 49ers, I'm willing to take seriously now. I think what they did to the Rams last week, I still think this might be a high watermark for them, and we don't know a lot about their quarterback. This is, if last week at Cleveland was a winnable road game, I see this as a very losable home game. I think this was their most difficult home game that's not in the division. I think this was, when I saw the schedule and the way I feel about Baltimore, it's more difficult for different reasons than I expected. I thought that this would be much more about, really about Baltimore's defense, and it's much more their quarterback. I think Lamar Jackson is playing incredibly well, and there's been a change. I'm more fearful of playing Lamar Jackson right now than Aaron Rodgers, which is a really different place to be. Like, Aaron Rodgers, I don't think has been as accurate. I think he has, if anything, if he starts playing better in addition to the Packers maintaining, then I'll take them seriously as a top 2 seed. But man, I look at it, it's awfully early to ring the must-win bell. It's awfully early to ring it.
Okay, Danny. Okay. Well, take a look at what Green Bay is playing the rest of the way. They have a home game against the Oakland Raiders this weekend. Okay, do you really think that the Oakland Raiders are going to provide a challenge? I don't, Derek Carr. That's all I need to say. Next week, they go to Arrowhead to play the Kansas City Chiefs, who are likely going to be without Patrick Mahomes for some period of time.
That was brutal last night, wasn't it?
Oh, man, dislocated kneecap.
It's what it looked like. You couldn't see anything, at least I couldn't see anything on the replay where you saw, I didn't see the knee get injured. What I saw was when the trainer put his thumbs, what it appeared to be, and popped the kneecap back into place.
Oh,
that was the problematic part. And then he walked off the field, which seems encouraging, right?
If I was eating breakfast, I would vom a little bit. Yeah, he did walk off, but I've also seen Tom Brady walk off the field after a torn ACL. I don't think we can definitively make any conclusions on how Mahomes is feeling after the fact. What I do know is that he's probably going to be out. I would say at the very least, as a doctor, a learned doctor, actually check that, as someone who is related to a learned doctor, I would say that he's going to be out at least 6 weeks, and I just did that through Google.
So if the Seahawks, if this is a must-win game for them, you see this from the perspective that if they're going to have one of the top two seeds or if they're going to win the division, what are the stakes
for them?
Top two seeds.
I think if you lose this one, you are going to give the Green Bay Packers and the New Orleans Saints leeway to slip up. The Saints have the tiebreaker over you, so the odds of you outgunning the Saints as far as home field advantage or something like that are very low as it is. So you're basically competing with the 49ers and the Packers, at least right now. Things can change, obviously, for that number two seed in the NFC. And I just look at the schedule for the Packers the rest of the way. A road game against the Chargers, that's not a road game. A home game against Carolina and Kyle Allen at San Francisco is going to be tough. At the Giants, ooh, Washington at home, that's going to be easy. Chicago at home, Mitchell Trubisky. They have a very, very favorable schedule, and the Seahawks don't. The Seahawks are playing the Ravens. They have two games against the Niners, the Eagles,
the Vikings
and Rams.
Yeah. I totally can see that. I absolutely think that's true. You talk to KJ Wright, and he'll tell us about the difficulty of facing Lamar Jackson. That's coming up. The other part, though, that this game is fun, right? Like, these two teams don't meet that often. It's every 4 years because they're in a different conference. You don't see them that often, but I've always had a ton of, I enjoy watching the Ravens play. I think John Harbaugh has a really, really well-coached team. They usually play a ton of defense. I'm never wild about their quarterback, although now I am because I really like Lamar Jackson. This is a fun game. I'm excited to see what this matchup is going to look like.
I'm a football elitist, and there are only a handful of organizations that I actually respect, and the Ravens are one of them. And then add in this factor. How often do you get a game where you have two good mobile quarterbacks playing against one another? Because that's what you've got. You've got Russell Wilson on one side, and you've got, on the other side, Lamar Jackson. And, you know, if you want to go back in the time machine to as far as an enjoyable game goes, how about to Deshaun Watson versus Russell Wilson back in 2017? Was that not a fun game, even if it maybe took a couple of years off your life?
That was one of the better games that we've seen in Seattle. Maybe we need a little classic music here. Maybe there needs to be a build up to this. Perhaps a little. Yeah, there it is.
Two fearsome birds of different coasts. The Ravens from Baltimore, a city known for brick row houses. Edgar Allan Poe, and the greatest drama in the golden age of television, The Wire.
That's pretty good.
The Seahawks, a coastal bird, native to the Pacific Northwest, comfortable near the ocean or the freshwater of Elliott Bay. Wait a minute. Who wrote this? That's not a lake. Never mind. The Seahawks, with their happy coach, their efficient quarterback, and a defense that's, well, if we're being truthful, not quite as good as it used to be.
The days of Ray Lewis, Richard Sherman, and Terrell Suggs are never more. In this Elite Week 7 sparring, will Wilson or Lamar be starring, running, throwing, juking, audibling, taking their beasts of flight towards trophies they've won before?
It's really funny that these two teams, which are known for their defenses, I went and looked this up. I was surprised at this. There are four of the 32 teams, who've scored at least 20 points in every game they've played this season, and these are two of them. These two teams that are known for their defenses are actually among the league's most consistent offenses. And that's true even though they run the ball a ton. Baltimore has the most carries, the most rushes of any team in the league. The Seahawks rank number three. It's two teams that kind of have a similar style of playing, have a little bit of a similar history in that their defenses aren't quite as good as they used to be. But I have a feeling that whoever finds their defense first on Sunday is going to be the one that wins.
It's going to be a shootout, I think. There's definitely potential for that. Don't you feel that way, too?
I mean, I don't. I don't see a shootout happening. Really, you think it'll be a game that goes into the 30s?
I think it could, just given the way that these two teams are very balanced. Now, maybe because of how they tend to operate, both from a play call standpoint, running the football, maybe you won't find yourself in a situation where it's going to be point after point after point. But I think that the balance that the Ravens have, I feel like we might see very few punts in this game, and I think that it's going to come down to who has the ball last. And both of these teams at least have the offenses that, as you made a point earlier this week, lend themselves to having the ball last because they can run the football and they can also throw it when they need to.
I think the score is 10-7 at halftime. And I think it's two classic sort of counterpunchers circling each other, waiting for the other guy to start throwing. I'm not sure who will be ahead at halftime, but I see a low-scoring game. I do think it's going to be very drama-filled. And I could see a couple of lead changes in the fourth quarter, but I see a very slow start to this game simply because styles make games, and these are two teams that if nobody's pressing the issue, they're more than happy to kind of stand in the pocket and exchange blows with each other.
But maybe it's the one team that opens it up first.
And if that happens, you're going to see. And that's really, honestly, what forces the Seahawks to come out of their shell is a game like that Texans game you mentioned, or the Steelers game in 2015. When another team comes in here and Seattle's offense can't stop them, that's when the handcuffs gets taken off. That's when it's, all right, man, do whatever you need to do, Russell. Throw it down the field because we're going to need 35, 40 points to win this game.
And Lamar's going to be looking to throw it down the field when he gets the opportunity. I mean, I think that's just in his DNA. Maybe the Ravens have coached it out of him over the last couple of weeks, but this is something that I know he's always looking to do, in addition to always, when he sees a hole, he is going to take off and he is going to hit you with that, as Michael Bumpus told us yesterday, 100-meter speed.
It's time to find out what to watch for here on Danny and Gallant.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Real bummer last night. Not only was it a fairly terrible game that moved Troy Aikman to the point of pretty much berating the Broncos and Joe Flacco at a couple of different points, which was very amusing. That was the most entertaining part of the game. It was awful football from Denver and an ugly injury for Patrick Mahomes, who on a quarterback sneak in the second quarter came out of the pile, stayed down, was obviously hurt. It appeared that a trainer snapped his kneecap back in place. Then he went to the locker room, very quickly was ruled out. Here was Andy Reid after the game, cut number 7. And we still don't know a prognosis, but it doesn't necessarily sound like a doomsday scenario, but it's certainly not positive.
He's in a good place. I mean, he was in a good place on the field when it happened. He grimaced. Our doc was phenomenal and just calming everything down. You know, Dr. Schreppel, he just kind of calmed the storm right there, and Pat was good, felt very comfortable with him. He refused to get in that cart.
Hindsight Twitter was up in arms last night saying that Patrick Mahomes should never do a quarterback sneak. I suppose since he was dealing with an ankle injury, that is maybe a dangerous play, but Tom Brady does it all the time. I thought that everyone was getting a little too crazy over
it's
that.
It's dumb. That, you know, anytime someone says that, should you really run play X when a guy gets hurt? Anytime someone says that, I think you should insert play football.
Like, yes.
Should he really play football when he got hurt? Because that's the question. It's a sport with an injury rate. And look, there's different styles of game that you can play. I think Lamar Jackson takes too many hits. I think that's something you can generally avoid. But the idea of injury and avoiding injury is impossible in football.
Back to specifically just Troy Aikman and Troy Aikman not being a fan of the game. I was a little annoyed by Troy Aikman basically crowning John Elway as this master know-it-all with quarterbacks when he voluntarily traded for Joe Flacco this offseason. I feel like Elway always gets way too much credit for, honestly, not having done a whole lot other than signing a couple of defensive free agents the year before they won the Super Bowl. But that's neither here nor there.
Dude, they've gone to two Super Bowls.
Yeah. And what happened in the first one? They got Elway. They got Elway in the first Super Bowl.
I'm not going to say he's a quarterback whisperer.
Good,
or some sort of
not.
Like he knows how to pick quarterbacks. But they went to two Super Bowls and won one of them.
Yes, that's what happens when you sign a bunch of defensive players. You know what was hilarious was watching that offense that he had, that awesome offense, go up against the Seahawks in the Super Bowl and score 8 points like a bunch of losers.
You're going to make me defend John Elway, and I'll do it.
Yes.
Next.
What to watch for.
Okay, the league championship series have been bummers. And in a long, long American League championship series, game number 4 last night between the Astros and the Yankees, it was the Houston Astros taking a 3-1 series lead with an 8-3 victory. Yankees fans basically left this one
that was
quite
awesome.
Early.
You didn't enjoy that?
They
silenced them. Correa hits a 3-run homer or 2-run homer, and they were done.
There's something about seeing all those angry New York fans in the bleachers in
that
particular.
That warms your heart?
I just think it's funny, Lydia, that they all look exactly the same. Because if you actually do look into the crowd, they typically have the same angry face. And I feel like at any moment, they're probably yelling some sort of obscenity. And potentially, as reported by, I'm not sure who came with this report, but apparently they were going after Zach Greinke's mother and Zach Greinke's mental issues. I like to see Yankee fans sit there, stew, and suffer.
Yeah, I'll say this.
I was cheated.
It cracked me up that they left. Like, that was funny because they've waited, what, 10 years
for
the trip
years,
back to the
right.
World Series? And it seemed like the starch was taken out of them relatively early. Every fan base is capable of having idiots.
Mm-hmm.
The Yankees have no trademark or no exclusive clause when it comes to idiot fans.
What to watch for.
Duane Brown. A big question mark here. Among others, Ziggy Ansah, Bradley McDougal. Also a question mark. Here was Pete Carroll with our own Dory Monson from Cairo 97.3 FM on some of the injury update situations.
We're going to get all the way to game time. On Friday, a fluke got back on the practice field, and Dwayne is still hurting. We're going to list him as doubtful, and in case some surprise happens, he's going to travel with us and all that, and maybe he can turn it around. But it's not looking very good for him. But DJ's got a chance.
Doubtful is essentially out.
Yeah, I don't expect either one of those guys to play. And Ziggy Ansah, Bradley McDougal, both having some issues as well. Ansah, it's an ankle. McDougal, I believe it's his back. I think you might see a different starting safety. I'm not sure who they'll go with if Delano Hill slides in there, but that's something to keep an eye on a little bit later today after the Seahawks' final practice of the week. We bring in the professor now, John Clayton.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be 3 spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, what did you think of last night's Thursday night football game?
It was sickening. Sickening in the standpoint that now we have to worry, is Patrick Mahomes done for the year because of the dislocated kneecap that he had? And that's what I worry about. And so, because again, he's such a great young player, he's so great for the game, and I guess he's going to find out, first of all, if he has any ligament damage, and if he does, then he very well might have to have surgery. You know, we go back to 2009, Matthew Stafford did suffer the same type of an injury, but he was able to come back in 3 weeks. You have to hope and pray for the sake of the National Football League that Mahomes can come back in 3 weeks, because if he needs surgery, then he's out 6 to 9 months.
Yeah, that is a bummer, and everybody's going to be waiting. The other side of it was pretty ugly what the Broncos did.
Oh, yeah.
It earned the ire of Troy Aikman. Where are they going as a franchise right now, John?
Down. I thought that maybe they're starting to bounce back up, because they get the 0-4 start. The defense starts coming together. They win 2 games. Vic Fangio having a little bit of impression on that. But, I mean, the blocking on the offensive line. And we can talk about John Elway and the shakiness in trying to get quarterbacks.
Please do.
But I think what's even scarier is the lines he's put together the last couple years. And this is with Mike Munchak, one of the best offensive line coaches. I mean, they couldn't block anybody. I mean, look at the number of sacks on Joe Flacco. Some of it was Joe because, again, he's not mobile anymore and he can't really get away from some of the sacks. But, I mean, the blocking from left tackle all the way across is just horrible, and it takes away the running game, and it really puts them in a position where they can't win.
Garrett Bowles had 3 holding calls last night. Is that right?
Garrett Holds.
Along with a lot of bad blocks.
Garrett Holds is his name. He was a guy that people had talked about the Seahawks wanting, and then earlier this year, Elway was like, I don't think he knows what holding is. I honestly don't think he knows what it is if he thinks he's getting called for stuff he's not doing. That was about as disastrous a performance from an offense I can remember.
Oh, no doubt. And, I know at different times this year they talked about getting him benched, and I think that game right there could very well get him benched.
The Saints are in the driver's seat in the NFC. At least it feels that way right now, even with Teddy Bridgewater under center. Yesterday, Drew Brees said that he has graduated to being able to hold the NFL ball, the Duke. At what point do we expect to see Drew Brees back out there?
Seems like he's still on schedule for 6 weeks, so I think there's 2 more weeks, because the thought was, if they can go 6 weeks and go 3-3, then they can be okay, still make the playoffs. And now you see Teddy Bridgewater, he's gone 4 weeks, and he's 4-0. And even though he hasn't put up great numbers and they haven't got a lot of points, I mean, it's such a complete team, both on offense and defense, that now I think if you can get through these next 2 games, even if you go 1-1, they're in great shape to be able to get the number one seed, because then Drew Brees can come in and make this team even better.
He will be able to do that. The Cowboys have lost 3 in a row. Actually, there's a few teams. The Rams and the Cowboys, I would say two of them that are in really tailspins at this point that need to pull out of it. Which of those two teams, the Rams or the Cowboys, both of whom have lost 3 in a row, is most capable of saving their season?
Both can. I mean, I'm not discounting the Rams, because even though they're 3-3 and on a 3-game losing streak and have to go to Atlanta, I mean, they can still be in the mix. And of course, they feel they still can be in the mix. That's why they made the desperate trade to get Jalen Ramsey. So I'm not writing them off yet. And, Dallas has the better chance to make the playoffs just because of the way the division is shaping up. I mean, you can look and see that NFC North is like 5-2 against the NFC East. And if that trend continues, that means that, it's going to be probably a 9-win division, but whether it's going to be Philadelphia or Dallas. And so, you can beat up on the Redskins and you can beat up on the Giants. So there's a couple wins there. So I'd say right now Dallas has the best chance, but I'm not writing off the Rams.
Speaking of the Rams traded Marcus Peters to the Ravens, and he will play for the Ravens on Sunday. How much do you expect him to play, seeing as he had his first practice with the team just yesterday?
Yeah, I think that they've got to watch it, and I don't know if he should play the whole game, because it's a much more complicated defense Wink Martindale has over there than he has with the Rams. I mean, more disguises and things like that. And even when you saw at the beginning of the beginning of the offseason program, Earl Thomas even talked about how difficult it was, because it's not just cover one, cover three. I mean, there's so much disguises and things like that that you have to do. So I think they have to be very cautious. Then also realize that some of Marcus's worst games have been here in Seattle. I mean, he's given up basically a touchdown a game in the games that he's played here, and you saw the touchdowns and the mistakes that he made, or at least how beatable he was in the game a couple weeks ago on a Thursday night.
Professor, there's part of me that thinks there might be an upset in Washington this weekend. There's part of me that thinks the Redskins might end and the 49ers' unbeaten run.
You've been listening to Jim Moore too much.
Maybe a little bit, but hear me out. So here's the thing. It seems like the coaching staff wasn't sold on Haskins as the quarterback. Now they've got a new coaching staff that's in there that probably will cater things more to him. The second part is players, and there's a tendency, it definitely happens in the NBA, when a coach gets fired, the team comes out and tends to play a better game the next time, in large part because they want to show that it was the coach that was the problem, not the players. So there's part of me, and I think that people are believing that the 49ers have arrived, and I know they're a good team. I'm not sure that they've got the consistency week in, week out. So I'm not calling for it. I'm just saying if they do upset him next week, I'm going to crow about how I thought that might happen.
Yeah, I don't see it whatsoever, because first off, Haskins is really not ready to be a starter. And so now he's going to go out there with a shaky offensive line going against one of the best defensive lines in football. So there's not going to be the time to be able to do it. And, of course, the only way that he does start is if Case Keenum's unable to go, and there's a decent chance that he may not be able to play. So, no, I think this one's pretty destined that the 49ers should be able to win.
Yeah, what a 73-degree take, Danny. I mean, Kyle Shanahan wants to run up the score on his old team as well. Come on, man.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm just saying. If they come in, I'm not saying they're going to upset them, but I'm saying that I'm going to say I told you so if they do.
But you didn't tell us, though.
No, I said that might happen, Paul. This is exactly how you cover your butt and make proclamations without leaving hind parts exposed.
Okay, so look, if we take a look John, at the Seahawks schedule the rest of the way, I think they've got about seven tough games. I think the 49ers are in the same category. Mm-hmm. My take going into today's show is that this is a must-win game for the Seahawks if they want to get a first-round bye. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, agreed, 100%, because, I mean, figuring that the Saints are destined right now with everything going the way it is, that they're going to get one. And, you know, now you can see that you have to compete against the NFC North to see if you can do it, and the NFC South. And really, there's no—I mean, because right now the South's going to be New Orleans, and then, of course, it's not going to come out of the East. And so what you have to do is stay ahead of the Green Bay Packers, because the Green Bay Packers are 5-1. But is that with their schedule? And, you know, the fact that you got, you know, four division teams that are 500 or better, you know, that could start to wear down on them. So, yeah, I mean, if it's must win right now as long as Green Bay keeps winning.
Yeah.
And also, too, you have to worry, you have to catch the 49ers.
You do have to catch the 49ers. You've still got two games against them, right, and I think you can reel it in. This is, to me, last week was a winnable game on the road. This is a very losable game at home. It's probably their toughest home game against a non-division opponent. I think this is going to be a tougher game than the game against Minnesota. But we'll see. I'm excited for it, John. It should be really fun to watch these two teams match up.
Yeah, San Francisco, of course, that's going to be a big win that they still have at home, too, later in the season. But, no, I think it's a good one. And the challenge is going to be Lamar Jackson. They just have to find a way because, you know, our RPO quarterbacks right now is something, but the lack of pressure coming from the defensive line, that is a problem for right now the Seahawks in the defense. And so, yeah, if they can just get a few mistakes out of him, because that's the one thing. I mean, you can give up the yards. They've been kind of bend but don't break this year, but you've got to make the key stops at the right time and get the turnovers.
You're absolutely right about that. And KJ Wright's got something to say about the difficulty of stopping Lamar Jackson. Professor, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Okay, thanks.
It's our morning drive with the Professor John Clayton and Lamar Jackson. He is a problem. KJ Wright will tell us why next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
From the 206. So, Danny, you think the Redskins are going to win but not going to win? That's how you cover your rear? By not making decisions? Yes, exactly. That's 100%. I think there's a 36% chance that Washington will win. So that's not enough to actually predict the upset. But if Washington does win, then I'm going to come back and tell you guys, I thought there was a good chance that this might happen.
This is just such a lukewarm take.
73 degrees. That's exactly right.
I hate it, Danny. I hate it.
Don't
I
pretend
mean,
like I'm fresh off the turnip truck. I know how this works.
You're gonna have
you give yourself plausible deniability. So if it happens, you take the credit. And if it doesn't happen, you're like, well, I still have only thought it was 36% chance.
At some point, I want to dive into fresh off the turnip truck because that is an interesting saying. But
wait,
I mean,
you're not familiar with the turnip truck? Where do you come from? Do you say fresh off
I'm
the
not
cat
from a
truck?
What are you, a city slicker?
Yeah, I'm a city slicker, see? Yeah, I'm on trucks of cats and such like that. The other thing is, too, I mean, if you really want to put a hot take out there, you would be like, well, a meteor is going to hit the United States of America, and there won't be a game that the Redskins play on
Sunday. That's not going to happen. There's no chance of that. There's a 36% chance that Washington is going to beat San Francisco.
Where'd you get this 36 from?
My big computer brain.
So technically, 36.
I considered all of the different angles. I thought it was just a little bit more than a third.
36, you're saying Washington's winning, aren't you?
No, 36% chance that they win.
Okay,
there's a 64% chance that it's going to be San Francisco.
Then you're saying the 49ers are going to win.
Probably, but there's a decent chance that there's an upset. Now you're beginning to get
it. You rascal.
It is Danny and Gallant, and the Seahawks getting ready to take on Baltimore. And the Ravens are a team known for their defense, much like the Seahawks, and a season that has depended on their quarterback, much like the Seahawks. It's not going to be like looking into a mirror, but there are a lot of similarities between these two teams. Baltimore's most rushes in the league, Seattle third most. Lamar Jackson's faster and more a part of the run game. He's Baltimore's leading rusher at this point. He's got more rushing yards than Mark Ingram does.
Right.
But there are some similarities in both the way these teams want to play and the role that their quarterbacks play.
Yeah, and I think Jackson has taken on a little bit more of the role than the Ravens probably ideally want him to have. And you see what the Seahawks do. The Seahawks basically ask for Russell Wilson to take care of them when they absolutely need him to. Lamar's got a little bit of that. I'm going to try my best every single down to make a play. And eventually, I think you learn that that's not the ideal strategy to having a long career in the NFL. But when you're young, everyone thinks they're immortal. And I wonder if that's something that changes over the course of Lamar Jackson's career, either because he just learns it's a smarter way to operate, or if it's because it's something that he learns because he's forced to learn it. He gets hurt along the lines of Cam Newton or someone like that.
It will be interesting. But for the short term, is there a quarterback you'd less like to face? Is he the most difficult matchup that you'd face? I would suppose you put Mahomes in there, though Mahomes just dislocated his knee. Russell Wilson's in that category. Is he the quarterback you would least like to face right now? There it was.
I think right now, when you just look at his skill set, it is so different because of how fast he is, but also because he really does have a strong arm. He can stretch the field while also widening the field. How many quarterbacks can definitively do that? And I really think it's just he and Russell Wilson, at least as far as someone that makes you scared. Deshaun Watson's in that conversation as well. Let me rephrase that. As far as guys who can stretch the field laterally, but also can take off on you and run, or just bomb it deep down the field. And, you know, you mentioned Lamar Jackson and where he compares to quarterbacks across the NFL. I put on my Big J journalist pants. I went down to, direction-wise.
Over.
I went over. Thank you, Kyle.
I went
over and slightly down to VMAC yesterday, went into the Seahawks locker room. And, you know, we've been having these conversations about the Seahawks, how they're describing their defense in a lot of abstract terms. Well, when I caught up with KJ Wright, I got some more of those abstract terms to describe the Hawks defense.
We're almost there. Putting that full game together, dominance, turnovers. Not close, just doing right consistently, and it's going to happen here soon. I see it.
And the pass rush, the numbers haven't been there. The talent is definitely there. I mean, there are so many names that you guys have. What's the key to the, I guess, production, the numbers, the sacks, the QB hits happening?
It's going to come. These guys work tremendously hard. Ziggy's been a stud in this league for a while, Clowney. We all know what he brings to the table. But it's got to happen on first and second down, I believe. We got to get these guys in third and longer distances. And so these guys just pin their ears and get after the quarterback.
One last one. Lamar Jackson is really fast. He's also got a rifle for an arm. What's the biggest key to stopping a guy like that?
Man, I believe he's going to be the best quarterback we probably played all year. I think so. You ain't anybody better? I can't.
Top of my head? No.
You know, Matt Ryan's up there. Who else is up there? Play the Eagles. But anyway, he's tremendous talent. Just a guy that's fast, has touch. He got the rifle, but he also has touch. And the offense is centered around him. And so we got to be disciplined on the details, communicate really well. Because if he gets out, it's a long game. It's going to be a really long game. So we got a good game plan.
All right. Thanks, KJ. Good luck on Sunday.
Thanks.
KJ thinks Lamar Jackson is the best quarterback that the Seahawks are going to go up against all season long. And I think that's noteworthy. You look at the quarterbacks that they play down the stretch. He mentioned Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's having a very good season, even though the Falcons are just a hopeless mess. And Carson Wentz, I think, is one of the better quarterbacks in the game. He mentioned the Philadelphia Eagles there. But he is right. I mean, those are really the only two quarterbacks the rest of the way that I think could potentially test the Seahawks in addition to Lamar Jackson on Sunday.
Here's a text from the 719, which I think is pretty apt. Our defense better play well. The Ravens' strengths are what Pete prides in taking away, stopping the run and stopping the big plays. That's all the Ravens try to do it. If our defense doesn't play good, then what's the point of Pete's philosophy? There's some truth to this.
There
is some truth to that, that this is not a defense, or this is not an offensive approach that looks to spread a defense out. It's not an offensive approach that is about getting defensive backs in space and stretching the field horizontally. This is an offensive approach that looks to, very much like the Seahawks, force you to stop the run and then look to go over the top with a receiver like Hollywood Brown. If we just all agree that Hollywood's a cool enough nickname, we're going to call him Hollywood Brown instead of Marquise Brown.
Fantastic nickname, yes.
Yeah, he's just Hollywood Brown. That you're going to try to get the defense to suck up to stop the run and then go over the top. It is very much what the Seahawks look to do, and which is interesting because there's probably not there aren't many teams that are as aggressive about using analytics and trends as the Ravens, and there probably aren't many teams that disregard some of those when it comes to on-field strategy than the Seahawks, yet their offensive approaches are in some ways the most similar. Seattle should be built. They're not going to have to take three linebackers off the field. They're going to be able to keep their three linebackers on the field. They should be able to stop the Ravens, but that's going to depend on stopping Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, and that's hard to do, and it's going to be a really difficult test for whoever the Seahawks put out there at safety. If Bradley McDougal can't play, okay, you could have a couple of guys who are inexperienced back there. And one of the big things, as a safety, you can't let anyone get behind you. With a guy like Hollywood Brown, there is someone who is fast enough to get behind you. And with a guy like Lamar Jackson, there is a quarterback that is very good at probably making you hesitate and determine, okay, should I come up and prevent the 15-yard run that Jackson's about to take off on? Or do I stay where I'm supposed to be, deep downfield, making sure no one gets by me? This is the kind of quarterback that can really test that strategy. I mean, go back to Russell Wilson's first big game against the New England Patriots. Remember that all the way back in 2012? The Patriots are a team like that as well. Hey, there are a lot of teams, most successful teams in the league, their big strategy defensively is we're going to make sure that you don't get any big plays against us. We're going to keep things in front of you, and we're going to wait for you to make a mistake. But Russell Wilson stretched the field, and with his mobility, was able to bomb it down the field a couple of times for a few touchdowns. Those are the kind of things that Lamar Jackson could be able to do to your defense. And if you don't feel good, if you don't feel confident in these safeties, and I totally understand if you might not feel confident in those safeties, no matter how they've played the last couple of weeks, these are the kind of guys that could potentially be taken advantage of.
It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to bring in Brock for Blue 42, and that's going to include some questions about Oregon coming here and whether that Duck defense is as good as it's looked on the scoreboard. But up next, it's a low point for the league on Thursday night, not just because of who got hurt, but because of an offense that was limping along. You're going to hear one dissatisfied announcer next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to have Brock Heward's going to be stopping by. We're going to find out if is Lamar Jackson really the best quarterback the Seahawks are going to play the rest of the way. He's certainly been one of the most effective, most dangerous, most diverse players in the league so far. And the league just lost, we're not sure for how long, just lost another of its most diverse, most explosive, best quarterbacks in cut number six. That was a very innocuous play with very severe potential consequences for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs last night.
Now Mahomes, and that makes him 9 for 10 in that category. On third and fourth and one, picking up a first down.
Well, that's what I was talking about. He's at the bottom of that pile, and there's just a lot of bodies, a lot of people falling on top of you. And you know, I can tell you, a lot happens at the bottom of that. Just hope he's not re-aggravated that ankle.
Wasn't his ankle. It was his kneecap. Dislocated kneecap. It wasn't fractured. And I guess the question is whether there was ligament damage and whether Mahomes will now undergo surgery or just come back in a few weeks as the dislocated kneecap, as the swelling goes down.
I imagine we will find out what the extent of the injury is at some point this morning. I would be surprised if it's not out by, I don't know, like noon Central Time or something like that. So I think we actually might know the extent of the injury in a little bit. And really quickly, I don't know if this makes me a bad person. I always somewhat inwardly laugh when I hear the Fox like injury theme.
They have injury music?
Yeah, well, there's a difference between the normal theme and the Fox injury theme. The Fox injury theme, it's like it's slightly sentimental. You hear it?
They kind of slow it down at the end.
No kidding. Not re-aggravated that ankle.
I've never noticed that.
Yeah.
A little softer.
They have injury music.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine being the guy who has to make the decision about injury music? They're like, come on, be sensitive, hit the injury music. Can't you see he's hurt? The man is down.
Like
Cletus the
violin.
Robot should show some sympathy. Does the robot, as he's dancing, have a little bit of little droopy dog look to him as he's dancing as they go out to commercial then?
You know what? I don't think they show the robot anymore. I think that people would probably find it offensive, especially if the robot like is hobbling around on a crutch or something like that. I don't think it would be too happy. It would make viewers too happy.
Well, that was part of it. So that's the bad news for the Chiefs. And mm-hmm. I think the early reports are that he suffered a dislocated kneecap. There's questions about the extent of ligament damage. It was not fractured. And the decision that he'll face sooner or later will be whether to have surgery or whether to try and recover without that. The other side of this coin was I always find it amusing when a broadcast crew is moved to either anger or disgust by the product they're watching. Because for the most part, the announcers, they're not workers for the league. I guess unless you're doing an NFL Network telecast. But you're business partners. Like, you have a vested interest as an announcer in promoting the product that people are watching. So you can't, like, oh, why would you even spend your time watching? This is horrendous. But there are times where the situation is dire enough that you have to tell it like you see it, which is kind of what happened. And you play the progression here, because first it starts with, here's Joe Buck in cut number 11, when they're just making observations about exactly what they've seen so far.
Eight straight scoreless possessions. They scored a touchdown on their opening drive, and in the second half, 11 plays, they've run 30 yards, and they have one first down.
Yeah, this has been some ugly offensive football. And, you know, as much as Kansas City has struggled, I mean, it's hard to say, well, it's just great defense.
So you heard the little chuckle, right? It gets a little more pronounced as Aikman starts training in his disgust in cut number 10.
It's an incomplete pass, but it's just like a lethargic feel to this offense.
Well, there's no doubt, and this is where Joe Flacco, he's got to be the leader. I mean, he's been around, a Super Bowl winner. He's in his 12th year. You know, I don't want to be too hard on Joe, but, you know, let's get a little life out here.
One of my favorite moments of last night's game, and this was a little bit later on during the game, was where on a third and long, another of which that the Broncos were facing, Joe Flacco threw essentially a flat pass to Philip Lindsay and basically set him up to get absolutely decapitated in the backfield. And Lindsay gets up, and you could read him saying, "Come on, man! Like, why are you throwing this to me and trying to get me killed at the end of a game?"
It's like, why are you doing me like that? And it culminates finally Aikman just, yep, he stops putting any lipstick on the pig and just calls it like he sees it in cut number 9.
And they can't even go downfield.
No, this is about as bad on offense as I've seen. I'm shocked there's as many people still here at the game.
There it was. Deep, deep disgust. I'm surprised anybody's staying here to watch this.
There were more people still watching that awful football game than there were watching the American League Championship Series at the very end between the Astros and the Yankees. And I'm pretty sure Joe Buck would have rather been there, too.
It's possible. It's possible there were more people in the concourse at Yankee Stadium watching that than there were people sitting in Yankee Stadium by the end. Because the Yankee fans,
offenses I've seen.
The Yankee fans absolutely turned tail and stopped watching that, which was a little bit surprising to me, but I got to say delicious as well. I didn't mind seeing that at all.
Yeah,
I love watching a fan base turtle.
They're a soft, entitled fan base that actually really doesn't bring a whole lot to the table. They like to think that they do, but, I mean, if you were watching their attempts to dissuade or to throw off Alex Rodriguez and David Ortiz during post-game, they were saying to David Ortiz, "Who's your daddy?" which was just deliciously ironic because David Ortiz is, in fact, the New York Yankees' daddy. I think they confused him with Pedro Martinez, so maybe a little low-key racism going on. I don't know. It was a bad, bad look, I think, for the Yankees that night. It's been a lot of bad looks for the Yankees in this series.
The thing that I love most about watching the Yankees lose is this feeling of, when are we going to get to see a title that will permeate? And it came out a little bit, like Brett Gardner said,
yeah,
it's been a long time for them. They deserve it. Like, this idea that there's some sort of, if you don't win a World Series within a decade, you've been in a drought for the Yankees.
It's a nice standard to have.
It's fine. It makes me enjoy it all the more when they do get bounced. It makes it all the more enjoyable of, like, oh, the little entitled spoiled kids didn't get their little toy this time. Like, oh, or when people talk about, like, it's been such a long time for the Yankees. This is almost as bad as that time Donnie Baseball didn't get to win his World Series. Yeah, that's right. Mattingly didn't either, and I hope they never win again. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to bring in Brock, and I think I'm getting the ire of rivalry fired up because the Ducks are coming to town tomorrow. We're going to ask him whether that defense is as good as advertised.